Welcome back to Annie, Are You Okay? A podcast dedicated to disc golf and other things. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm here with Josh.
What's up, guys? Today, we're going to be talking about disc physics. Last week, we started with an interview. This week, we're just going to jump right into the disc physics. Pretty fresh in our heads. We just came back from the course. We were playing around with the Justice, a disc that we'll be reviewing later.
And we're kind of, you know, applying what we were learning with the disc physics to what we were seeing with the Justice. So that's kind of why we're going to start with that first. Is, you know, it's we're fresh into it. We did some videos, and you'll see all about that. So, but Josh has done a lot of research into this, so I'm going to let him get going on this.
Yeah. Alex, have I ever mentioned that I'm not an expert?
Yes.
Yes. Well, in case you guys don't know, I'm not an expert. So some of the things that I've found changed my opinion on some ideas that I had before. But, you know, like a good scientist, I'll let what I found shape my idea of what I think the world is. Right? I can change my opinion. Anyways, as I delved into this research into the most basic of disc physics, the flight ratings, I found a lot of interesting things and learned a lot of interesting things.
It's always good to know about what the numbers really mean. I mean, I know when I first started playing disc golf, I basically bought everything according to what the numbers were. I think I may have bought like a Destroyer, my first disc, or something really, really powerful and overstable. High speed with lots of glide. No, actually,
no, the Destroyer has a moderate amount of glide.
No, you know what I got?
What?
I got the Groove.
Oh, the Groove.
Yes.
Best disc available, especially for beginners. It's just so forgiving.
Forgiving, yes. It's got a 13 speed, 6 glide. I mean, like, where could you go wrong with a Groove? I mean, it's groovy. It's not really groovy. It's groovy and like a vibe. Not really. Anyways, maybe that'll be one that we review some other time. It's been a long time since we've actually thrown the Groove with improved
form, yeah,
mechanics. So maybe it would actually work differently for us now.
Maybe.
All right. Anyways, back to our disc physics.
So all discs have a 4-number rating. You have speed, glide, turn, and fade. But what do those numbers mean, right? Well, last week I had a lot of fun going over the disc physics. When I started doing my research for disc physics, I got like way too deep into it. I watched an hour-long video, like an MIT lecture with all these formulas I couldn't understand, all about like angular momentum and gyroscopic inertia and precession. Anyways, don't do that. There's much easier research out there. I went from the question that I was originally going to do to the number rating. I thought, why don't we start a little more basic?
Yeah.
All the discs have a 4-number rating. What do they mean? How can I use what my disc numbers are to my advantage by knowing what they mean?
Yeah.
So the first one is speed. And the thing to know about speed is there's no industry standard on what a speed is. So a speed 10 from a dynamic disc might be different from a speed 10 from a disc rack.
But don't they have, like, similarities?
Of course they have similarities. But, like, women's jeans, the numbers really don't mean anything. They do. Like, what's a size zero? It's not related to inches, centimeters. Ridiculous.
Ah, right.
And they vary. But there is some rules.
Interesting. I never really thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Men's jeans are, you know,
yeah,
32, based on 34, the based amount on of inches that yeah. your waist is around.
And like, zero.
Regardless of what the number of the speed is, the higher speed discs have wider rims.
Yeah.
And the PDGA legal rims have to be within or less than or equal to 2.6 centimeters, and that's 1.02 inches for anybody that's concerned about inches. So you can have it smaller, but you can't go bigger than 2.6 centimeters in width. The higher widths have the higher speeds. So, what is speed, really? Speed is the amount of velocity that a disc can have before it turns over. The amount of velocity that you can put into it before it turns over. Here's something I think we should know. Every disc will turn over or flip with enough velocity. Velocity, basically explained, is the speed of an object going in a given direction. Discs work with a gyroscopic inertia, which is a twisting fashion. Torque goes into it, causes rotation. The disc spins with a certain degree of velocity. And the wider the disc rim, the more aerodynamic it is, because the more it cuts the wind, right?
So you're saying that, so I grabbed some discs out of my bag. And I found a ruler because I have a kid and I have rulers. So I was looking at this, and this is literally 3/4 of an inch.
3/4 of an inch.
Thickness, yeah.
So yeah, from the outside edge to the inside edge of the rim. Outside edge of the disc, inside edge of the rim. That is...
So there to there, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, 3/4 of an inch. It's got to be under 2.6 centimeters. The higher, faster speed discs across the industry fall in the 2.1 to 2.5 range.
So this is about a 2, maybe a 2.1. This is a getaway, which is a speed 9.
So it's a 2. So as you get closer to 2.6... What's also your highest speed? We'll just go to the highest speed.
This is a speed 12.
And I can tell that it looks wider. Well, just measure it.
Yeah, but here's a 12.
Okay.
12, it's a sword. This is about 2.3, 2.2, it looks like.
So it's as it gets wider, it gets faster. And that's the industry standard. The higher or the wider the rim, the more aerodynamic the disc, the more speed or velocity that it can handle before turning over.
There's a dynamic disc sheriff. This is a speed 13. And guess what it is?
2.4.
Right.
Boom! That was a guess. So mids and putters have their weight more evenly distributed.
Oh, no, that was a captain. And here's a sheriff. And it's the same speed as the captain.
So he's doing right now, although nobody can see it or hear it.
2.4. Yeah.
We're doing an experiment. Suffice it to say, the wider the rim, the higher the speed the disc.
But you said it has to be below 2.6.
It has to be below 2.6.
And is that a PDGA rule, or is that just PDGA where they rule. Find that it's optimal?
It's PDGA rule.
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe what if you made one that was 3.6? How much more aerodynamic would it be? Could you get your hand around it?
Yeah,
of course you could. Your hands aren't that small. It's not like you're, I'm not going to say the president, but... So discs spin and they create inertia. There is a thing called the moment of inertia, which is the amount of energy needed to get the disc spinning. The more weight that's concentrated on the outside of the edge, the higher the moment of inertia. So that means the more energy needed to get the disc spinning.
So here, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. Let's hear more about the width of these discs.
Well, this is because I didn't realize that I had a Discraft nuke. I don't even know what the speed of it is, but a Discraft nuke is almost 2.5.
So it's probably 2.5. A high speed.
Look how.
But I'd be interested to see if you had a 2.5 from another disc manufacturer and if it were the same speed.
Yeah.
Because the speed, the measure of the speed, the number that it gets is not standardized. So the moment of inertia is what separates drivers from putters and mids. And as you look at putters and mids, they don't have those wide rims. The rims are wider. The weight is more evenly distributed. And when you have a lower moment of inertia, you need less energy to get the disc spinning. But it loses its spin more quickly. The thing about having a higher moment of inertia is that it spins for longer. But to get that spin, you need a fantastic snap. The snap has to create that energy. If you are not throwing with the right amount of speed, the disc will not fly on its optimal flight path, which can be a benefit, and we'll hit on that later. MVP, as you know, has the plastic overmold. The reason they do that is they can put even more weight at the end of the disc and use a lighter plastic for the plate.
Right.
Which means if you use a mold, you have to essentially use the same weight of plastic and try to thin it out to distribute it more in the rim to get that higher moment of inertia, which also beneficially makes it more aerodynamic by making it thinner, which we'll get into with lift. But the MVP uses the overmold to get a more dense, heavy plastic on the outer rim, more weight out there, a higher moment of inertia, making it able to have discs like the Tesla, which I think might be the fastest on the market. I just did a minimal amount of research for that.
What is that?
It's an MVP overmold. It's like a Speed 14. It's
Colossus is about the same too, isn't it? It's a Colossus.
It is, but it's a single mold plastic instead of an overmold plastic, so they're able to get more weight on the outside. Again, the speed rating is not standardized across the industry.
And there we go.
Yes. So, with speed, the thing you have to understand is the higher speed discs need a higher speed release. They need more of a snap to get them spinning, because the moment of inertia, as it goes further out and isn't as equally distributed, means it requires more energy. But because there's more energy on the outside of that, the inertia is higher, which is going to make the disc spin for longer. So the next rating is glide.
And it means nothing! Just kidding.
Well, to me, it does not mean what I initially thought that it means.
Yeah, me too. In fact, it's incredibly complicated.
Yeah, I thought, you know, glide. Like, it's going to spin, it's going to stop spinning, it's going to glide and float down.
Right.
No. The glide, according to Dave Dunapace, the modern inventor of the disc, the modern disc, or, you know, taking it from a Frisbee into what we have now, Dave Dunapace said, glide describes the disc's ability to maintain loft during flight, or the amount of lift that a disc has compared to other discs of the same speed.
Right.
Meaning, a speed 10, glide 5, is not going to be a similar glide rating to a speed 5, glide 5. They're the same number, but they're different speeds. The speed only relates to the amount of lift that it has within that given speed. So the glide is the lift. So gravity and weight pull the disc down. Lift lifts it up. A domier disc will create a higher glide rating because, according to Bernelli, I don't know how to say it, but...
That Italian guy.
And I'm not even going to... I'm going to summarize. I'm going...
I'd say he's Italian.
It sounds Italian, but he's, I mean, that if he's like Japanese, I am saying it way wrong, right? Like, why did you even say Bernelli? Anyhow, he was a principal of a school, and so they call this the Bernelli principle. Bernoulli. Anyways, as an object moves through the air, the air density, and air speed, the wind, the air has to go over and under that object at the same rate of speed. If there is a larger amount of area to cover for the wind going over the top and a shorter amount for the wind going under it, it's going to create two different air pressures. The air pressure, because it has further to go on the top, will be thinner. And the air pressure on the bottom, because it has less distance to go, will be higher. That higher pressure is going to lift the disc.
So does that equal out to having a thicker rim and a domey top?
It's not a wider rim.
Well, no, I meant like the depth.
Oh, because the base. How it cuts the bottom as well.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine you'd have to, in order to create a less amount of air underneath, you'd have to restrict them kind of getting there, kind of, or filling it up.
Well, remember, there's also the whole gap underneath it. That the air has to rush up to fill.
Yeah.
Right? Anyways, it creates a lift. So there's this whole complicated, it's really not complicated, but there's a formula for lift. Lift equals air density times air speed times a whole other formula that equals glide.
Yeah, not complicated.
The way I wrote it. I am not a physicist. Once again,
totally not an complicated expert.
I should be getting this all wrong. And if somebody out there corrects me...
Just apply all those numbers. That should be perfect.
I'll know it better. So the thing about the formula is it's proportionate. If air density increases, a glide and all that... If air density or air speed increase, glide increases, lift increases. If one increases or decreases, so do the others. Too much glide means the disc is going to sail high. It's going to slow quickly, and it's going to change its line. You know, a disc has an optimal line. I keep saying that. You expect a disc to perform a certain way. That disc will perform that way if it's thrown correctly. Things that will create too much glide would be a headwind. Mm-hmm. You're going to throw a disc into a headwind. It's going to increase the glide. Everyone's done it. We know the disc rockets way up in the air. It's up in the air for like 7 seconds, but it goes 250 feet.
Right.
Because it drops down. It lifts up high. It glides high. It drops down. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
So there are reasons why you'd want more glide in a disc. More glide, in some cases, equals more distance. But the problem is more velocity, more higher speed snap increases the lift. So people with low velocity throwing players will benefit from having more glide.
Right.
While a higher velocity player would benefit from using a moderately high glide, like a destroyer or a wraith, which is why you see so many pros, yeah, because of how high the snap velocity is of their arm, they have to use a lower glide, because the higher the velocity, according to that
formula,
the thing on the internet that I found, if you throw it with a high velocity, the lift will increase. And the disc will rocket up. And you will not get the optimal flight line. So what are some other reasons why you would choose a high glide disc? Because you want the disc for certain reasons. If there is a tailwind, the tailwind is going to decrease the lift. It's going to push the disc down. So if you use a 6-rated glide in a tailwind, you're going to get more of that optimal flight.
Right.
Right? If you have a headwind and you use a 1 glide, or a 0 glide. Is there a 0 glide? Probably not.
Just go to the ground, so. Right?
But in a headwind, you'd want to use a lower glide.
I wonder what that one that's like the birdie, right? It's called a birdie, but
that's
it's got that really
putter.
thick rim.
Basically like a dog bowl.
Yeah.
And it could double as one.
Yeah, it could.
It absolutely could. Sure. Or a cereal bowl. I mean, it doesn't have to be a dog, or you could feed a raccoon or a cat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an animal ball.
Doesn't have to be an animal. If you're really mean to kids, drink out of that, kid. It's got Fanta in it. You know you want the sugar. No.
Don't try that with your kids.
Definitely don't.
As a reminder, don't put your disc in the oven.
Like we've said before, we are not responsible for the thoughts and opinions expressed on this show.
Even if we said them.
Yeah, we didn't say them. Who, me? Unless it's like awesome. Then absolutely. Yeah. We said it. I wrote it.
Yep.
Or we didn't write it. This is all. Anyways, this would be really bad if we wrote it.
Yeah.
Like, how do you think like that? Anyways, wow. Back to gliding. headwinds will increase the lift. So with a big headwind, you want to grab a disc out of your bag that has a low glide rating to compensate for that headwind. Now, here's something interesting that I hadn't thought about. Because of air density times air speed, right, increasing the lift or the glide, low-density air is going to decrease lift. Higher altitude and higher heat.
Low-density air.
Low-density air.
Because
you have less
things
to push.
Can drop. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has less resistance.
Less air density.
Yeah, less air density creates less resistance against.
Well, the air density is what it's cutting through, which is creating that Bernoulli effect where it lifts up. It's trying to equalize. Everything in the universe tries to balance itself out. So when you cut that disc, you create that thin air that it has to lift up. But if you have less air density, there's going to be less pushing it up. So when you're in higher altitudes, you're going to want a disc with a higher glide rate to get that optimal flight line. Or if you are in a high heat, like maybe once or twice in Florida, it gets really hot.
Yeah, or the humidity of the air. Humidity of the air would create it, cause it to be more dense.
Interesting. It would be a higher heat situation,
yeah,
but it wouldn't be drier, so it would be a higher... Maybe it would still be a less dense air than we're used to. No, it would make for an optimal air pressure. Oh, man, all the more reason.
So...
To do more tournaments in
Florida. Yeah, it's always dense air.
I
and probably maybe goes to like average dense air, but it probably never gets low.
Yeah. So low density air produces smaller aerodynamic effects and requires more glide. Less aerodynamic effect, of course, I mean, that makes sense. You require more glide. You need something to help it fly, to lift. And here's another.
I wonder how it is. And maybe some of you can write in and let us know what the difference is. Like if you live in a cold, snowy state, what's the difference between you throwing during the summertime and the wintertime? Like I'm thinking about like my family, you know, lives in the Midwest and then like the Ohio, Kentucky areas. There's a lot of valleys where
You get different air pressures.
Yeah, but during the wintertime, becomes drier, right?
Sorry. Yes.
So.
Yeah, because I've lived in Kentucky.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
But Wisconsin, you lived in Wisconsin. In the wintertime, you'd have drier air, yeah?
Absolutely.
Which would make it less dense.
And it's cold.
And in the summertime,
But Wisconsin was muggy.
So then you'd have dense air during. So you would have that experience. Do you remember?
I don't remember ever throwing discs in the wintertime.
Oh. Because it's Wisconsin.
Because it was a fun activity and it wasn't something I was like obsessed with.
Right. You weren't. You had not.
Yeah. If I played three or four times a season, I was like, cool, man. I played a bunch of disc golf, three or four times over the summer.
Right.
Yeah. Way different back then. However, there are, believe it or not, other reasons to use a higher glide rating. And that would be a heavier plastic. So you can have the disc of the same mold that ranges from 130 all the way up to 170 grams, right? So the thing about lift is if the lift remains constant but the weight changes, the flight line will change. So a heavier plastic thrown at the same speed, 170 thrown at the same speed as 150 is going to drop. Or 130 thrown at the same speed as 150 is going to lift more because the weight is less.
Right.
So the line will change. So if you want the line to change or you have a heavier plastic, that's what you would want the higher glide rating for.
I see.
I mean, and that's just something when you're out there on the course and you're maybe you've got a DX plastic and a Champion plastic of the same mold. It doesn't matter about the plastic. Maybe you have a Champion that's 130 and a Champion that's 150. Why you would do that? I have no. Why would you even get 130? Am I getting this all wrong?
I don't know.
Who would throw 130 gram? That's like.
Well, if you haven't, you know,
that's like
people will plastic. Do that. Yeah, people will do that to get the, you know, distance records. They'll do for
the disc. Actually, the distance record was like 168 grams, and then like 174 for the flick. Yeah,
I thought it was less than that.
Well, it's because they have a higher speed velocity or a higher velocity snap. They don't have to rely on things like a lighter disc. Because the lighter disc would actually create a higher amount of glide or lift, so they would not get the distance because the flight would go higher rather than further.
Right.
They want the heavier disc because of the amount of velocity that they're putting into it. All right, so that leads us into the third number, which is turn. But just like with glide, it should be called something different. It should be called stability, the stability rating. Right? Mm-hmm. But we call it turn because stability, if it's understable, it's going to turn over. We said this in the beginning, every disc will turn over. Every disc will flip with a high enough amount of velocity. A more overstable disc can handle more velocity before it turns over. A more understable disc can't handle the velocity or doesn't require as much velocity to turn over. That's a better way of saying it. Doesn't require as much velocity to turn over. Some people will use that for a turnover shot. So the stability rating or the turn rating goes from a 1 to a -5.
Right.
So there's one number of overstable and then stable to 0.
The turn rating goes from a
1 to a -5.
Oh, 1 to a -5. So nothing is more than a 1.
Nothing is more than a 1.
I didn't know that. Interesting.
Yeah. I didn't make the number rating either.
Is but fade the opposite?
Fade.
Like 5 to a -1?
5? No. Fade actually just goes from no fade to 5, to a bunch of fade. There's no minus fade. Yeah, the minus fade would work against the procession, which is not what we're going to get into all right, now.
So we're at turn. Go ahead and explain turn. I just got my head ahead of myself.
Turn, which should be, in my opinion, called stability, is the third one.
But nobody would understand stability if you said, oh, hey, look at this stability. What?
Look at how stable this disc is. Oh, like it loves its mom?
Yes.
In a healthy way? Stable means its resistance to turning over at a higher speed velocity. So let's say, for example, that you have an understable disc. Every disc has an optimal flight line. And then there's the turnover flight line where it's going to turn over and it can turn into a roller. It's an errant shot, or it's an early release and it's you let go early. You don't snap with the right amount of velocity. You don't get the optimal throw, right? So if you want to picture three lines of flight, take the middle shot being the optimal flight line that the disc is going to go from the tee pad to the basket.
Okay.
Now, on either side of it, you have errant shots.
So if I'm like, so I'm thinking about looking straight ahead and I've got my arm straight in front of me. That's my optimal spot, yeah?
According to how the disc flies. You're looking at it from a bird's eye view. You've got on the bottom edge of the page, you have the tee. At the top edge of the page, you've got the
basket.
From the tee to the basket, you will draw the optimal flight line or the line that disc is designed to fly.
Up
a little bit. Maybe depending on its stability, it'll turn a little bit more. And then depending on its fade, it'll come back or it won't come back.
So you look at those flight lines that they have at the disc manufacturers.
And you determine what the optimal line is. Now, this is just a visual to talk about the turn of a disc, right? The stability of the disc, its ability to resist turning over. Now, on the left side of that optimal line, you're going to have a shorter, more turned line.
Right.
And on the right side of that line, you may have a longer shot, but it's going to turn the opposite way because it's turned over. You've put way too much velocity into it, and the disc is turned over, right? So can you picture that? Like three different shots. Right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about like when I put power into like a Sheriff, which is like a speed 13. If I do the same thing with like, you know, a Northman, which is a speed 10, or an Escape, which is a speed 9, it completely turns over.
Right. It's not handling that
same velocity.
It doesn't handle the velocity as well. It's not stable enough to handle that speed. So that's sort of the thing. You've got your disc that's an early release, or you've got your shank that's a late release, or too much power, or, and this is a lot of beginners, a lot of intermediates, maybe a couple of pros, maybe all of pros. I don't know. I'm not a pro.
Yeah.
But you can have a perfect shot. It snaps better than you usually throw, and that puts too much velocity into the disc, and it's more velocity than that disc can handle. You're used to throwing it your way, and it shanks. Yeah. But that's just because you had a perfect drive. Like
or,
my dad throwing that.
I was going to say, a good example is when you're using like a beginner-style disc, and then your arm speed gets up to good form, everything's kind of clicking, and you still throw that same type of disc the way that you were, that'll turn over very fast.
Because there's a higher speed now. Now that disc is coming out of your hand at 70 miles an hour instead of 60.
Right.
So we know that the width of the rim, the speed is not industry standardized, but to throw that optimal flight line, according to how the manufacturers designed it, you'd have to throw it at 60 miles an hour, let's say for an understable disc.
Uh-huh.
50 miles an hour, you're going to get that one on the left, the early release, the weak shot, the wimpy throw.
Uh-huh.
And then the turnover that turns over because you put too much, we'd say that's 70 miles an hour. So you got 50, 60, and 70, right? That's an understable disc.
Right.
Now, we know that the higher speed resists a higher velocity. So you can put a higher arm speed into it. So while the perfect shot on a speed 9 would be 60 miles an hour, the perfect shot on a speed, why am I saying speed? We're talking about turn or army. They're all related. See, this is the thing. When you throw the speed 10 at 70 miles an hour, it's going to have the optimal flight. But if you throw it at 60 miles an hour, it's going to have that one on the left.
Right.
Whereas for the speed 9, when you throw it at 50 miles an hour, you have that wimpy turn. I say went. Sorry. It's just for the visualization.
Quickly.
The line on the left turns over too quickly. So
I mean, it's like when you're a beginner and you decide to throw like a destroyer and you can't get your arm speed up, and that destroyer turns over early in the flight. Never really flips up to flat, you know. Just
So you can actually throw an understable disc and have it fly in an overstable manner because you are not producing the right amount of velocity in your snap to get it to fly on its optimal line.
Yeah.
So with the higher speed disc, here's the thing, you'd have to throw it 80 miles an hour for it to turn over.
Right.
So it can resist more velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you want to throw a speed 11 minus 5 turnover disc, TDX, I don't know if that's really 5, but let's just say you want it to turn over, but because it's a speed 11, you have to throw 80 or 90 miles an hour to get it to turn over too much.
Yeah.
So maybe if your arm can only throw it at 70 miles an hour, because that's your speed when you're throwing your normal, consistent throw, it's going to perform more overstable, even though it's an understable disc.
Right.
So what you have to learn how to do, have you ever heard the term, because you're from Kentucky, Kentucky shotgun?
Never.
No. So it's like a disc. Let me tell you how. No, are you kidding? You've heard Kentucky shotgun.
But I think you should explain it out anyways.
Okay, so it's like, no, I'm not going to say it. Can you cut that? I was going to say, like, peeing after sex. Like,
no, ding! I can't cut it. It's too late. Of course I can cut it.
So a Kentucky shotgun is a shotgun that doesn't fire straight. It blows off to one side or the other. So in order to hit your target, you have to compensate for it. So you have to know which way it's going to shoot wrong.
Right.
So a disc, in the way that it fades or glides, you have to, or how it throws, depending on your consistent shot, you have to know how to use it. So if it's going to turn hard to the left because you're throwing an overstable disc at an understable speed, it's going to turn hard to the left, but you can use it to your advantage if you know the throw. So then you compensate. And here's the thing. We'll get to this as we get to the end of fade, but why would you want a more overstable disc when you're throwing?
Yeah.
Hint, more consistent landing zone. No, I just gave it. It's not even a hint. Or is it?
All right. Anyway. So we've got one last bit in there, right?
Well, yeah. But let's just summarize stability. There's a couple of factors that can affect the flight path of the turn. A tailwind can make a disc fly understable or a poor release. For your optimal throw, you have to have many consistent factors. You have to throw the same way all the time. For overstable flight pattern, it can happen in a headwind. You know, it because of the lift, it's going to shoot up and drop hard.
Or but if it's understable inside the turn, it's got a heavy turn, it will shoot up. It'll typically turn over.
Yeah. The glide, you mean, it'll shoot up.
The glide will shoot up, but it'll turn over. Because it's understable, it'll have a more tendency to flip over.
Or a higher release velocity can make a disc fly in that anyways, I feel like I got that all mixed up. I was going to say overstable. This is a horrible summary. Let's hope that everything else is better. If you want to throw, if you don't throw with enough velocity to turn your disc over, you will have a more consistent shot. In other words...
Wait, say that again?
If you don't throw with enough velocity...
If you don't throw with enough velocity... If you don't
throw with enough velocity to turn your disc over, you will have a more consistent shot. The hardest way to explain that would be to say that if you throw a disc that's optimal line is at 60 miles an hour, but your arm speed is 50, it's going to perform more overstable for you. But like a Kentucky shotgun, you can use that to your advantage for a more consistent shot. An understable disc can vary in its flight and its landing far more than an overstable disc.
Yes.
Because you have to either throw it perfectly or the slightest variation, you could end up with a difference of, heck, 100 feet.
Right, right.
So, fade is the very last one. And fade goes on a scale from 0 to 5. 0 is less fade, and 5 is more fade. Every disc is going to fade a little bit, but a 0 is going to be more of a forward fade. So, what fade means is the tendency of the disc to hook to the left or the right at the end of its flight. It would hook to the left for right-hand players, backhand throws.
Yeah.
It would hook to the right for left-hand players, backhand throws, or right-hand players, flicks.
Right. So but the tendency for it to follow its natural...
To fall to the left.
Fall in its natural.
Fall in its natural line.
line.
Not like an
ant. That's what the fate is. To fall in its natural line.
To fall in its natural line. Right. So depending on how you're throwing it, right, it's going to always, like a Kentucky shotgun,
fall
a certain way.
Right.
Now, the fade number relates to how much of a hook, how hard of a fade it's going to follow on that line. If it, let's just for the sake of this being simple, it's a right hand backhand, it's going to fade to the left.
Uh-huh.
If it fades more forward, it's closer to a zero or a zero. If it fades hard to the left, it's closer to a five.
Right.
Like a five would be close to a 90 degree angle when it fades. It's going to drop to the left.
And how quickly it goes to its fade is
related more to its
turn
and speed.
And speed.
Because the speed, like the moment of inertia, is how long the disc stays spinning.
Right.
The spinning is going to be what helps to move it forward. The precession, which we'll get into in another time, is what makes it fall in the direction that it does, its natural fall. The fade, however, has to deal with how much it hooks when it falls.
Okay.
How hard it hooks. So a lower fade rating equals a more forward fade, and you can use that for more distance. It's going to drop forward.
Right.
Right? So that can actually be used for more distance. It's not that it's that people are like, hell yeah, I'm going to get a zero fade just so I can throw further. It would be better to work on your form.
Right.
So, but a higher fade rating is going to be more of a left or right fade, and it's going to be less distance. So I know what you're thinking.
What?
Why would you want less distance?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose maybe you want less distance if you want to have more accuracy?
Yes. I don't know why I'm saying that, Alex. You're an intelligent guy. Yeah, absolutely. For precision. You have to know how your disc is going to throw. And because we don't always, the lanes, believe it or not, are not always a straight line.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, one of the number one reasons for getting, for paying attention to the fade rating is for shot shaping. What if you don't have a straight path and you want the disc, let's say it's a driver with a high fade rating, not even a mid-range, and you're going for your drive and you want it to go way forward and you want it to flare at the end, a higher fade rating is going to hit the ground at more of a hyzer angle. It's going to roll like a couple of centimeters and shoot back into the air or skip or flare in a certain direction. Now, the harder that it's going to skip or fade or turn in that direction is based on how high the fade rating is. But if you want to get around a corner, you want something with a higher fade. If you want a higher flare, you want a higher fade. Also, distance control. Let's say that you've got this great disc, like a FD second run,
The legendary disc. I was about to bring that up.
Yeah.
But I was looking at a regular. Right? Well, so a regular FD has a 7/6 -1/1.
And fade. So it's a forward fade.
It's in the C-line plastic, always. And the C-line is always a stiffer, more overstable plastic tendency.
And you can see through it. Not that, that changes the flight at all.
But so the legendary one is glidier, which would maybe indicate a
higher lift. Higher amount of lift.
Yeah, which so it would make it a 7.
So it's legendary because the pros aren't the ones throwing it. It's us that need the better lift because we have the slower release velocity. But having a zero fade, if it behaves like it has a zero fade, you're going to still get more distance because it's going to fade forward. But if there's a lake behind the basket, you don't want a zero fade.
And I wonder,
you don't
want
to hit the ground and skip and slide into the lake. You want to come up and then drop hard next to the basket. So distance control.
Throws more like a 0-0.
Like a 0 turn? Like
7-7-0-0. Yeah.
7-7-0. Those are legendary numbers, people.
Because it said it was stiffer as well. Oh, and then maybe it said it was more of a flat top or a domey top. I think it's not. I don't think it's domier. Well, it has to be domier. It's got a more lift, right?
Yes, because the dome would increase the Bernoulli effect by making the air above it thinner and the air below it higher.
And what would decrease a turn?
What would decrease
a turn? Or what would increase a turn or put it more close to a zero?
The line of separation and how high it is off of a flat plane. So you put your disc on the table, right? And you look at it and you see where the nose is, the furthest edge of the rim, and how far that is away from the bottom of the table. The higher that line is, the more overstable the disc is going to be. The lower or closer to the table it is, the more understable.
True. All right. So then, the legendary disc, I guess that would make it domey, but with a kind of smaller like a more consistent profile as far as having a separation line, like domey, but not like not as domey?
It would be less domey. No, because it's a higher grade.
Yeah, but I'm curious because it says it finishes right? forward. Does it? I wonder if it has the minus one turn or if it just goes with a zero. Like, if it is it a straight? You know,
guys,
straight.
If any of you know what part of the disc relates to what causes it to fade harder or not, I'd love to know. I don't have the answer.
Yeah, or if any of you have an FD, second run FD,
send it to us.
Love, yeah,
totally. So we can throw it. Well, I swear to God, we'll throw it back and try not to hit any trees. Hand to God, whatever that means. I think it's like a soccer reference.
It is. Hand of God.
Hand of God, right? Because that's the only time he has his hand. Oh, because a soccer ball went through like the hole.
No, it hit it. He punched it in.
Because it.
And.
Cheater.
He was a cheater. And then later on, he was just like, oh, it's the hand of God.
God likes cheaters, right? Like King David.
Yeah.
Didn't he like kill some dude so he could sleep with his wife? Yeah, he did. Shot! Chopped his head off, slept with his wife. King David, everybody loves him. Do some research.
But yeah.
Keep it okay. Anyways, so one of the last reasons here would be holding a hyzer angle.
Right.
Why would you want a higher fade? Because you want it to hold the hyzer angle.
Yes.
A higher fade disc, you know, if you put it on a big arc.
It's really predictable.
It's predictable, and it's going to hold that hyzer angle better.
That fade and that turn or stability of the Justice is one of the reasons why I like it so much, because it is highly predictable. It does the line every time I, you know, whatever line I put it on, where it's going to go.
Yeah, when we were out there just before we did this and I was throwing the disc, I said, I'm going to aim at that tree because with the higher fade, it should come back. It landed right next to the pin because I was like 2 or 3 feet away.
Yeah.
It was a drop in. Spike shots. What if you've got a big tree or an obstacle or you're Garrett Gerthy and you want to go up over a tree because nobody does that?
Right.
Except for Paul and
other people, with really strong arm speed
and high velocity snaps. Or, hey, I've tried to throw up a tree and managed to do it.
I see. Yeah, you can. Yeah, if you look at a Wintertime Open, they have a.
But have you ever tried to throw?
They use a speed gun, so you can see people and their velocity and see the comparison between those throws. So that's a pretty good thing to watch for comparison.
Let's say that you had a 90-degree dog leg, like at Bob Gardner.
Right.
And you want to go around that. You want to throw a big spike hyzer, and you want it to come down the other side of the dog leg. You want it to make a 90-degree. You're going to throw it on a high arcing shot. But if it's got a low fade rating, it's going to fade straight. So it's going to go way up in the air. But you're going to land out of bounds. It's not going to make that turn. It's not as reliable for holding that hyzer angle. So a higher fade is going to get you a better skip shot, a better flare, a better spike hyzer.
I wonder what the Simon line would be on that.
Well, everybody wonders what the Simon line would be. Only Simon knows.
I think he'd go with a heavy, heavy anhyzer straight up into the sky.
He'd take the sky god and he'd throw it straight up in the air.
That's what I mean.
And Thor would hit it with Mjolnir and knock it into where, because I think they have a deal.
Yeah.
Even though he's German, I don't know German mythology. No. Apologies.
Yes.
But maybe it's Thor. It could be Thor. Thor is awesome.
I mean, yeah.
He's like American iconology right now.
Yeah. Thor.
Iron Man. He was Thor. A Viking god, wasn't he? Iron Man.
Odin, right?
Oh, so Odin. Norse. Yeah, I got that all wrong. Like, Odin is close to Iron. Odin Man and Thor.
Odin Man. Odin's his dad.
Iron Man. Oh, way off. So some of the things that can affect fade. Let's bring it back to the topic. Some of the things that can affect flayed are a flat angle of attack. So the angle of attack is the way that you throw the disc.
Right.
So a flat angle of attack is going to reduce fade.
Right.
A higher angle of attack, like you would need for a spike hyzer, is going to increase the fade of the disc. Right?
Right.
And a higher fade disc is also one of the major components of a turnover shot, a flex shot.
Uh-huh.
Because you want it to fight. If it doesn't fight, a lower fade disc is going to continue to turn over. It's not going to make that anhyzer line, that pretty S. It's not going to fight back and fall on its natural path. A higher fade disc will. Dynamic discs, Danny Lindahl, I believe, or somebody completely different, but I believe it's from Danny Lindahl. They made this cool little grid on the angle of attack and the stability of the disc. Okay, so if you throw an overstable disc on a hyzer line, you're going to get a spike hyzer. If you throw a stable disc on a hyzer line, you're going to get a hyzer flip up flat. Uh-huh. It's going to turn enough to flip up to flat. It's stable because of its turn line, right? An understable disc. And mind you guys, this is throwing these discs on their optimal flight line. Mm-hmm. Not like just because it's understable and you threw it on a hyzer line, it's going to cause like a hyzer flip turn, right? Or a turnover shot, and what I would call a natural aim.
So if you throw an understable disc on a hyzer line,
its turn, because it's got a high turn rate, at the beginning of the shot, it's going to turn, right? You're throwing it on a hyzer line.
Right.
But it's going to flip up.
Because it's on a turn.
But because it's flipping up and it's understable, it's going to continue to glide far out this way before turning back. So if you threw an understable disc on a hyzer line that had a low amount of fade, it would not in. It would not be like a turnover shot.
Right.
And if it had a high amount of fade, after it drifted out there, the end of its shot, it would fade hard back and you get a natural anhyzer line, even though you threw it with a hyzer attack angle.
Right.
Now, a flat attack angle, right? Perfect form, just nice and flat. If you throw an overstable disc, you're going to get a straight hyzer. It's going to come out and cut hard.
Uh-huh.
If you throw a stable disc, it's going to do a distance flex. A distance flex is where it turns a little bit, right? It just, when you see it and it like naturally just pulls out a tiny bit, still a straight line, but depending on the fade, a fade zero, it's still going to come back a little bit and end up straight. Much like the legendary FD second.
Right.
Or the FD, if you want to just throw an FD, it doesn't have to be legendary. They still have very similar fade rating, a one. So if you throw it on a flat line, you're going to get a slight distance flex. And I know that because that's what happens when I throw a nice flat line with the FD. But if you throw an understable disc, you're going to get an anhyzer if you throw it flat. Because it already wants to turn over.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on its fade rating, again, is how it's going to come back or not. So I say any, but that also depends on the fade rating. Now, if you're throwing an anhyzer attack line, which is the one that's up by your jawline instead of down by your belt, right? An anhyzer line of attack, angle of attack. If you throw an overstable disc, you're going to get an anti-flex, which is it's going to fight hard to come back. It's overstable, so it's going to hold that line. And if you don't have the right amount of release velocity, you might not even get in it.
Right.
Even though you're throwing an anti-line, it's still, man, that faded hard. So if you're going to throw an overstable disc on an anti-line, you want to get that anti-flex, you have to have a high level of release velocity.
Right.
If you throw a stable disc on an anti-line, you're going to get a maximum distance flex shot, a maximum distance in, right? It's a stable disc on an anhyzer line. It's
going
to come back. It's going to go out, come back. Perfect max distance shot.
Right.
But if you throw an understable disc on an anhyzer line, any disc is understable if you throw it past its designed release velocity. So if you throw an understable disc on an any line, you will get a roller. Have you ever seen those pros, of course we have, that throw like 250 feet before it hits the ground and rolls another 400 feet? Like if I throw a roller on an anhyzer line, I'm not throwing it out that far. But they have that release velocity where they can use a higher speed disc with a lower stability rating and still get it turn over into that roller, where they might take a Monarch on a roller line, where for me it's going to be an anti-flex because our release velocity is different. So if you see a pro throw a disc a certain way, doesn't mean it's going to work that way for you.
True.
The best way to learn about a disc is to throw it.
Yep.
A bunch of times.
A bunch of times.
Different way. I mean, and if you don't enjoy doing that, well, I guess you don't like this one.
Yeah.
All right, so that concludes it for this segment on disc physics or this episode. Feel free to email us with questions. I love to do research. So does Alex. We'll get into it. And hey, if we're wrong, let us know.
Yeah.
If I got better information, I'd love to apply it to my game.
Exactly.
I'd love to figure out, okay.
That's actually some of the fun part of researching this stuff is realizing how it does apply to your game.
or applying it to your game app. So all of a sudden you're like, well, that's why I'm going to use the higher fade disc. I need to get around the corner.
Yeah. Or the straight gap, you know.
Why does this
low fade disc, the low turn?
Why does this S-Line Discmania TDX not turn the way it's supposed to? Not turn the way that it's shown on the company's flight chart? Because I'm not throwing it with enough release velocity.
Yeah.
Or it's too overstable because it's an S-Line and its shrink characteristics means that it was designed to be slightly overstable until you beat it in and got the desired separation line.
Yeah.
See, it all comes together.
It does all come together.
So you may have noticed that we didn't do the review of the Justice, an overstable mid-range from Dynamic Discs. We just were so into the discussion of the flight numbers of discs that when we got to the end, we realized that if we added that in, it would be far too long of an episode. So we'll just do that in the future. And thanks for joining us on Annie, Are You Okay? Thank you.